The following is an audio podcast from the Korea Society, celebrating more than a half century of promoting awareness, understanding, and cooperation between the people of the United States and Korea. For more information on our programs, please visit our website at www.koreasociety.org. This podcast is brought to you through the generous financial support of the Tongyang Group. In the areas of financial services and manufacturing, the companies of the Tongyang Group harness the passion and creativity of 12,000 employees worldwide to better serve their clients. The Tongyang Group, a global partner for Korean business. Host Marja Van Gerechten and producer Eric Ree visited the Korea Society on May 3, 2011. To discuss the making of the Kimchi Chronicles, a 13-episode travel and food documentary airing on PBS. The discussion was moderated by David Kim, a film director and co-founder of the Korean-American Film Festival, New York.
Okay, so I'm Dave Kim, founder of the Korean-American Film Festival, New York, and we have Marja Van Gerechten and Eric Ree, part of the Kimchi Chronicles. Very excited to have you guys here. It's very exciting to see Korean food taking kind of a main stage in on a place such as PBS. I mean, how did you guys even, you know, come to know each other, get to, you know, be involved in this project together from the get-go?
This is Eric's baby, so I'll let him start.
You know,
it's become
better.
My baby as well, but
you know the story better.
Okay, you're gonna
the dinner that we had.
Eric was having dinner with our executive, our producer, Charlie Pinsky, at John George, and I happened to be there with Hugh Jackman, just doing like a family Friday night dinner, you know, like people do with Wolverine. So my husband took me to meet Eric and Charlie, who he's known for quite a while, and they just happened to be discussing this Korea project. So I spoke my little bit of Korean and greeted Eric, and Charlie, I guess, was just mesmerized by my presence and called JG next day and asked if I'd be interested in hosting this series. And then, you know, through talking with him, my story came out and my connection. So, yeah, it's just kind of been a natural thing, no?
I mean, basically, it was a decision between using a Korean-American chef and I don't know if everybody knows Marja's story, but it's an incredible story of really like the true Korean-American spirit, somebody born in Korea but yet gets adopted and then finds her family. And I think a lot of us Korean-Americans have that issue, not just necessarily with adoption, but just finding our own identity. And this show is really about her identity and finding people through food. And, you know, over any other chef that I've met, we thought that Marja was the best kind of storyteller for this series. And her passion for food and obviously her connection to food made it kind of... You know, the next day, Charlie and I were talking, we said, you know what, let's just do it with Marja, because it makes the most amount of sense. So at the end of the day, her story made our story even better, so that's kind of how the story happened. And that's what Kimchi Chronicles is really about, is telling your story about Korean food, about Korean culture, and we'll talk about this later, but I think Kimchi Chronicles is just a movement to start people to get to talk about their own Korean experiences,
right,
whether you're Korean or not. And I think Marja starts that movement with her story with our series. So,
yeah, I mean, that really appealed to me a lot about, I got a chance to watch the first episode, and, you know, it's more than just food, you know, it's just food as an entree into getting to know people. You know, I think, I mean, for myself too, I mean, I'm a big foodie. Whenever I go somewhere, it's all about, like, food first, you know, and then
right. That's
how I get to really like a place. If they don't have good food, then I'm just kind of bummed out and I want to leave, you know.
Exactly.
It looks like you're having a lot of fun on this trip, and, I mean, was it smooth sailing all the way, or?
Of course not. The TV production. No, it wasn't smooth sailing. I mean, I think the main reason was there was just so many stories out there, we couldn't fit everything into the time that we had. It was the hard part was filtering.
Yeah,
you know,
we're both biased. We know Korea, but to figure out what would be the most important for people to understand, to filter out all the stories that I've been exposed to, and find out what would be the most interesting to Americans,
mm-hmm.
that's the hardest part. I mean, you know, waking up early, you know, 6 a.m., 5 a.m. to go to fish market, that's hard. I mean, it's hard for me. But really, the hardest part of the production is trying to narrow it into 13 episodes, 30 minutes, because we shot over 200 hours of footage, and we had to turn that into, you know, less than six hours of footage. Right. And
well, how did you kind of make that choice? Like, what kind of, I don't know, structure or format were you thinking in your head to, you know, make these 13 episodes?
Take it away.
So each episode is broken down by a food group or a food ingredient. So we have an episode on beef. We have an episode on noodles. We have an episode on rice. We have an episode on
beans.
And so each episode is inspired by a Korean ingredient or a dish that's used commonly in Korean food. And except for the intro show, most of the episodes are basically inspired by, hey, what's the best place to get noodles? What's the best place to get galbi? What's the best place to get doenjang jjigae or kimchi jjigae? And as you saw in the preview clip, the best place to get kimchi jjigae is this place that makes it in 7 minutes, at least for us. And
that's my favorite place. And that's my go-to.
That's what she does when she gets to Korea. And the first thing she eats after she lands is a 7-minute kimchi jjigae. So that's how we kind of pick our story. And then we also got some local recommendations from, you know, people who've been going to restaurants for years and years. And so, you know, it's a combination of what we thought was good for Americans and then what Korean people thought was their favorite in their country. So,
Were you pretty successful finding great places in this way, or did you come upon a few places that turned out to be duds? Or
no, I don't think we ever had a dud, but Eric did all the footwork. He was there probably 6 weeks before we
All right, so you're checking out, make sure.
The only dud was, like, I went to McDonald's one time.
Oh, stop it.
Because I was so wanting a hamburger, and there's no really in Korea.
What about Krazy Burger?
The best lunch we had when we were watching the traditional dancers. We had the Subway sandwiches.
Oh, we had Subway
sandwiches. Oh, Subway sandwiches.
Because when you're traveling, I mean, this is, if you ever go abroad and you're abroad and you eat the country's food for like a month.
But excuse me, I'm eating it 6-7 times a day.
Yeah.
From like, you know,
and,
9 in the morning.
And we eat it with her, but at the end of the day, if you're American, you're like, you know what? I want a hamburger or I want a sandwich, because that doesn't exist for us in our diet when we're on the road, because we're always going to Korean restaurants. But if you ever travel, you'll always feel like, you know what, I want something American.
Just wanted a bite, just a little.
So I had I had a Big Mac, a Whopper, and a cold cut trio all in Korea, and those are some of my most memorable meals because I wanted it so bad. So
all right. So, you know, you were saying that it was a challenge for you to try to figure out what's going to appeal to an American audience. I mean, you're Korean, right? And you're familiar with all these foods. I mean, how did you kind of figure out what might be good for someone who's coming from America or a Western audience?
Well, you know, I mean, for me, I can't speak for everybody who's a Westerner. I can only speak from my experience and growing up in Western culture most of my life. You know, I think we just kind of followed our hearts, and I gave Eric ideas, you know, where I go with my family and what appeals to me and what we like to do. So we just, you know, I think it was really natural. We did have some story ideas that were given to us, but, yeah, I mean, we tried to keep it as organic as possible. My family is sprinkled throughout. Mm-hmm. My grandmother's in there, my cousins, my uncle, aunts, so. Mm-hmm.
And so you visited, you know, geographically speaking, I mean, like, what areas of Korea did you visit? I saw that you obviously visited Jeju-do and...
Yeah, Busan, Sokcho, where most of my family is, my grandmother, and I have a lot of aunts and cousins there. And
where is Sokcho exactly?
Northeast.
Northeast, yeah. Right, like, 60 miles south of the North Korean-South Korea border. But right on the coast.
Have you ever been?
I've actually never been.
Oh, no. You have to go. It's great because you have mountains and then the ocean. So great seafood coupled with, you know, beautiful mountains and hiking and temples. And I just find it to be really serene.
We even went to Lotte World. I don't know.
Oh, really?
There's footage of Marge on a roller coaster at Lotte World.
Oh, that roller coaster. Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
It's called the Viking or something. So we went everywhere. We went to beaches. We went to mountains, temples.
Fish markets.
In heels. We went to nightclubs. We went to norebang. We went to street food, like pojang matcha tents.
What was the most memorable norebang night for you guys?
Which one?
Which one, yeah.
Well, from what we remember, I think it was after we had been shooting at Pojang. We went to see Lee Young-hee, the hanbok designer, traditional hanbok designer, who I met years ago, ironically, and I was in a fashion show of hers in New York with Chloe, and then just to be reconnected again through this series was great. But we shot there, and then we went to your friend's place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fun.
So I don't know. Hmm.
There's a norebang in Korea where there's a stage, and there's like lights, and it's like literally if you were performing at the VMAs or something like that, it's that type of environment. And
yes.
There's an audience, and it's like and there's like LCDs in the back, and
oh, that's very exciting though. I mean, it's not, because what I don't like about norebang sometimes, it feels very antisocial. You go into like a small room and
depends on the crowd,
the screen, but this is you're going out there. Right? It's
every now and then, but we have enough crew that it feels like we've got an audience.
Great. How about like going through, while you're going through Korea and trying all these foods? I mean, you mentioned that you're visiting your family at the same time. Do you see your family often? And like, how did that kind of add to the experience of the Kimchi Chronicles?
Well, I see my family in Korea, you know, I try and go every year, but it is difficult with everyone's schedule, and you can't just go there for a week. I mean, you need at least 2-3 weeks. I mean, my mother likes to spend a month, and I used to do a month, but can't do that now. But what made it special was I felt even more at home, and, you know, any Korean who has an emo, my emo is like a typical Korean emo. I mean, she really took care of me on this trip, and I didn't feel so far from home, because I was traveling a lot by myself without our daughter and my husband. So it was great just to see family and have them around. It just felt even more like home, mm-hmm.
And I saw that one of those trips was to a beach, and you're eating on the beach and everything.
That's in Sokcho, yeah.
That's in Sokcho?
Yeah.
What were you eating?
My aunt made a crab, a spicy crab stew. And then she did some samgyeopsal and
And was there soju involved too, or
always?
What were the more adventurous cuisines that you tried out there? And I mean, I guess you might have already tried some. But I saw some great footage there of your husband. What was that? Is this long and string?
Sea cucumber intestine?
Yeah, intestines of a sea cucumber.
That's tough.
Have you tried that before?
No. He does that. But I had bondegi, which I used to eat when I was little. I used to eat it all the time. And, you know, I remember that smell. And, you know, we went to the market. We were in Insadong one day. And, you know, bondegi is silkworm larva. Well, Charlie was like, eat it. I said, well, now I know what it is, you know, and it looks like what it is, and it smells like what it is. Anyway, that was a little tough, because I didn't have
Had her first sundae experience in Korea.
Sundae was good. That was good.
Yeah.
Because it was spicy. No, I had sundae before, but not from...
Sundae is basically, you know, it's sausage, right? I mean...
Blood sausage.
Silk, blood sausage. Good for hangovers, so mm-hmm. Right?
Well, I have other hangover cures that... I take my friends. Actually, this is how I introduced all my friends to Korean food, especially the ones that are kind of skittish or worried that it's too spicy. So we go out and we get drunk, and I just take them to, Pocha. And, you know, especially my friend Nathan, who's in the audience, he'll be like, what is this? I'll be like, shut up and eat it. And then the next morning he'll call me and he'll be like, oh my God, I feel great. What was that we ate? And I'm like, see? You know, you just got to close your eyes and eat it sometimes.
Uh-huh.
But he loves pude jjigae, which is, you know, pretty hardcore, right. But that's one of our family's favorite.
Yeah, if you guys aren't familiar with pude jjigae, it's basically kind of
army
spicy
stew.
Yeah, army stew, spicy casserole, whatever you got, just throw it in there and
right.
And just cook it up with some ramen noodles.
And spam and hot dogs and cheese.
Spam and cheese.
Right, let's talk about it.
Yeah.
But that particular jjigae came about from all the surplus from the military, you know, over time. And Koreans started adapting spam and American cheese. And different things into, you know, whatever you had at home. But it's a pretty darn good stew.
So you are a fan of Spam?
I love it.
Anybody else out there like Spam? I like it.
Hey.
Don't be shy. All right, well, I mean, how about for you, Eric? I mean, what did you go through when you were, you know, doing the shooting and everything, you know, logging over 200 hours of footage and everything? Like, what happened along the way for you?
Nothing at all. my biggest concern is that everybody was safe. You know, I, as sort of the person that, the worst thing that could happen on any shoot is you're getting good footage and my biggest concern is nobody gets hurt, nobody gets sick, and it's kind of like I'm like the nanny. And
tell them I missed my flight.
Marjorie missed her flight on the first shoot. She said, "I thought the flight was tomorrow," and I said, "No, it's at like 12:50 a.m. today, and you just missed your flight." And she's like,
"Horrible."
She was like crying. And
what a great first impression.
It was fine. I built that into the schedule. I actually thought that she would miss her flight, and we were fine.
Oh, stop it. You did not.
You need a producer. He's your man right here.
No, but along the journey, it was an incredible journey to go back to Korea. I've never been there for work or business. And you learn a lot by being there versus as being a tourist versus for business. So me personally, I thought that it was an incredible experience just to understand the way Korean people do business, which is different from the way people in America do business. And for me, it was an incredible learning experience. And at the end of the day, my biggest concern was that everybody got home safe. And then hopefully we got the right footage. Even getting the footage and, you know, we back up everything twice because we record onto digital, like media, every, you know, these memory cards. And I remember thinking, so do we ship one ahead of time? How many copies do we make? Do we need to make 6 copies? Because once that footage is gone, your show's gone. So we eventually got the footage back. But, you know, those are the concerns I have. it's different from what Marja has. Marja just wants
my banana ouyu on set.
Yeah, she wants her banana ouyu. She wants her wojinga. She wants her, you know, it's different concerns.
So we talked a little bit about like your experiences on this journey. I mean, did you notice some insights that people that you met, maybe things that they might have learned from you guys coming over and you know talking to them and enjoying the food and everything?
That's a good question.
You know, I think I understand. I mean, Korean people, I mean, I'm sure there's some of you here, but Korean people are all about respect. I think as I was doing business, as we go to these stories, and what I learned was how important respect is in Korean culture. And it's not necessarily about money or fame or anything else. It's just that I think at the end of the day, Korean people care about respect for what they believe in, with respect for their values. And so whether it's with, you know, sponsors or with your local ajumma who runs a, you know, banchan stand, it's you have to appreciate what they're trying to do with their lives. And if you can relate to them in some way or another and respect that, then they'll let the cameras in. They'll open up their lives to you as long as you respect. And that was the biggest thing. Is you
show enthusiasm,
yeah,
for,
show
it.
Enthusiasm, yeah, for it. And, and to me, you know, growing up in America, sometimes that gets dismissed or taken advantage of or not even, you know, considered. But I think in Korea, even now today, it's still about respect. And I think it was a good reminder back to kind of the roots that my parents taught me that no matter what, you always have to show respect. And whether it's to elders or other people, I think when we go and do these stories, the last thing you want is a producer barging into your store or restaurant and saying, "Oh, we're a TV crew. We can shoot here." No,
we're
you have to actually, too. Yeah. And
yeah.
What I learned was before you even bring the cameras in, try to understand who they're about and try to understand their story and then tell them what you're trying to do and communicate that. And then I think that's what leads to a good TV show. But you'll see later whether that's true or not.
What do you think about, so, I mean, obviously, you know, you were saying that the show is kind of like the first step to promoting Korean food and culture, you know, here in the States and everything. We're here in New York City where, you know, it's kind of like the place to try all these things, to spread these things and see what catches and what doesn't.
Right.
What kind of potential or future do you see for Korean food here in the city, or like, you know, like what do you think the possibilities are, basically?
I think the fact that people eat Indian food on a regular basis and Japanese sushi on a regular basis says a lot about, you know, people being able to adapt to new things. I think it's just a matter of exposing it and people learning about it and seeing it and trying it and seeing other people that look like them and come from the same walks of life eating and trying those things. So just exposure, exposure, exposure.
Mm-hmm. What did you think? What do you think is are some foods that people can adapt to very quickly?
I'm so tired of talking about the barbecue and the bibimbap because I feel like, you know, that's, of course, it's amazing Korean food, but it's just, it's so safe. And, you know, my thing with Korean food is I can always, you know, if I've got an ailment, my stomach's not feeling good, or, you know, I'm feeling a little cold coming on, I know what to eat. And I find that Korean food is medicine mm-hmm. for your body. In addition to being really tasty and satisfying at the same time. So.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm really excited about this personally because, you know, when you're walking around thinking about what to eat normally, it's like, what do I eat? Like a hot dog or a hamburger or, you know, just like french fries, all these things. But like, you know, I love that stuff. I absolutely love it. But, you know, if once you got to eat it like every single day, it kind of wears on you. And
it's terrible.
You know, so... You know, I'm very excited about the possibility of having, you know, a little bit more different kinds of foods, I think, available to us. And, you know, obviously that's very possible here in New York.
Right.
What do you think about, you know, as far as other parts of the country, do you think that, you know, maybe this kind of food can catch on? And, you know, how do we promote food
well,
to do that?
Well, I mean, I went to Utah skiing earlier this year, and they had more sushi restaurants than you could imagine. So I think, you know, it's about time. People just need to know where to get the ingredients. I mean, Korean food, I think, is simple. It takes a lot of time and a lot of care and a lot of love. But as long as you have your, I mean, what is it, 6-7 ingredients that I use for almost everything, as long as you can order that online, you can go to your Safeway or Giant or, you know, D'Agostino and buy the ingredients pretty much. Mm. So I think it's really doable. And, you know, in our household, we've adapted a lot of, you know, regular American-style barbecue with Korean flavor, so.
And in what way? What do you do to your American barbecue?
Well, I'm responsible for the marinade and sauces. He does the grilling, and I do all the sauces. You know, but he doesn't have the patience to stand around and see what I actually do. So he just asked me to make it, and he can never replicate it. So that's a good thing.
And so a lot of these recipes that you came up with, you're putting into your book that's going to be coming out as well?
They're all in the book. Mm-hmm.
And what's one kind of, you know, teaser recipe or, you know, dish from your book that you might be able to offer?
One dish that I'm really, really proud of that always comes out really good is takbokkeumtang, which would be takdoritang, but that's chicken stew. So I'm saying it the proper way. But I really love that dish. It's comforting and it's kind of like soul food. I always say Korean food is the soul food of Asia.
Mm. I just got one question though before we go to the audience. What does silkworm taste like?
It tastes like silkworm. I can't describe it any other way. It tastes like a bug.
Huh? Was it good or just?
I say no.
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 Okay, I'll take your word for it then. All right. So, do we have a question from the audience at all? And if you could come to the side, here we go. Oh no.
Hi. My friend. Can you hear me? So it appears that there's like a really good mix between. Is that on?
Do you?
That there's a really good mix between like sites that you deliberately sought out, like the kimchi jjigae place, and places that were more like by the seat of your pants, right? In the exploration of Korean food and the culinary landscape, was that something that you deliberately tried to seek a balance of, or is that something that you just...
Definitely.
Yeah, I think anytime we do these shows, or, you know, in general, when you go to a country, half the food in the travel guides is... It's kind of, it's not good. So if we went by, you know, those travel guides, I don't think we would have found the stories. the other half of the stories, I think, come from meeting people, getting recommendations, finding people that have been to these restaurants for years. And so I think it's an organic process of let's find a good balance of what's commercial and also what's organic and what's, you know, authentic. And I think we hit a good balance, but between touristic places that, you know, Americans who've never had Korean food can go to, and then kind of the hole-in-wall places that if you already know Korean food, that this is like the next level, mm-hmm. the next level up, like the, you know, Silkworm Lava. You know, it just, there's some food that we sought out to say, you know, what would Americans first want to try when they come to Korea? And then there's that food that, you know, what would even Korean people want to try, even though they may not necessarily be familiar with some of these locations, so.
Mm-hmm. Next question.
Now, I know a lot of people here are meat eaters. I am not. I am a vegan. And I absolutely love kimchi and have found a world of wonderful eating in Korean food. So did any of your investigations follow some of what's on tradition? There's a lot of course, monk food and so forth that is there that may not be so spicy, but also a lot of modern Koreans are leaning that way. A lot of organic farms. Was there anything addressed in your series by that?
We went to
Sancheon.
Sancheon.
We did we have an episode dedicated to kind of vegetarian and temple cuisine. One of the episodes is about going to, we went to the temples and we did, you know, kind of what people do at temples in terms of praying and showing that aspect. But we also went to temple cuisine restaurants where you kind of see the history and kind of why people believe what they do. And, you know, monks usually in Korea, they their temples are mountainous regions. So a lot of the food that they make is kind of mountain vegetables and herbs. And mm-hmm. so we kind of see and understand, you know, their philosophy on food, and you know, they don't even use garlic sometimes because it's too
pungent,
but also there's no, I don't know how to say it correctly, but in Buddhism, there's no, you don't eat food for its flavor, you eat it for its nutrition. And so therefore, if it tastes good, it's almost against kind of the values of Buddhism, but it's really for nutrition because, you know, they want to take care of the plants and stuff like that. So we did some stuff in Buddhist cuisine, things like that.
Oh man! Hi Eric. Hi Marjan.
Hi Key.
Hi.
I'm only asking this question because I know the answer. But what was the coolest day on the shoot for both of you?
You go first. I want to hear this.
There was we were in Jeju-do. And we did a episode at, you see a little bit of the five, there's a 5-day market. It's a market in Korea, in Jeju-do, that only happens every 5 days. And we weren't going to do anything except just feature the 5-day market, but Jean-Georges was exploring and kind of figuring out, you know, he'd never been in a Korean market before. And I remember he said, I can't do his French accent, but he said, you know, I have to cook tonight. I see all these ingredients. And so,
right.
That day it was nice for several reasons, but we basically went to the location, shot it, went to another location, then went back to the market to pick up groceries, and I went grocery shopping, and we bought all this amazing seafood from Jeju-do, and Jean-Georges and his friend Magnus cooked a dinner for just the crew and Marge and everybody, just not for TV, just because he wanted to, and that was one of the most memorable experiences, just because it wasn't planned by anybody except Jean-Georges, and we shot it kind of in the kitchen, which will be part of the behind-the-scenes stuff, but it's basically Jean-Georges' friend Chloe cooking in the kitchen for the entire crew, and it was almost kind of like a relaxing day, yet getting a taste of Korean food in a different way. So,
what did he cook, by the way? Was it...
He did a langoustine with a gochujang mayo dipping sauce. He did, he did that cabbage saute with fresh, I think, red snapper from local red snapper. And then he made a mushroom saute, and it was just, it
tasted good.
It was pretty good.
It was all right.
Not as good as yours. Right?
I don't know what that's favorite. What I'm trying what to tell you, people.
What was your favorite day? Huh? What was your favorite day?
My favorite day. I think my favorite day was when I was in Sokcho. The scene that you saw on the beach with the singing, or my aunts and my cousin and my grandmother. So just to be able to see them all and spend some time, because our schedule is really, really crazy. But just to spend the day there and have my aunt make my favorite stew was great.
That was a pretty magical day. Her grandmother, I remember, was waiting in the van just for this one moment so we can capture it on TV.
Two hours.
She was waiting for our crew to set up. And I felt bad. She was in a hanbok. And if you saw the orange hanbok, she was patiently waiting. She didn't say anything, you know. She didn't say, you know, when are you guys going to be ready? She's just kind of, waited. Well, she kind of waited. And then finally we got to the beach, and it was her family, her, you know, cousins, and basically just a regular picnic on the beach. And anybody who's Korean and anybody who's, you know, American definitely understands how important grandmothers are. And for us to capture that moment and feature it in the show is probably one of the most important elements of the show for us and for Marja, and to tell her story. So that was second most important to me.
Hi, good evening. I'd want to firstly congratulate you on such a wonderful first episode. Thank you. I presume all the other episodes will just be as exciting. Two quick questions. Number one, how many places do you think you visited during the production of the...
Gosh.
I'd say that about a dozen different places throughout Korea. If you consider Seoul one place, there's probably 11 other cities we went to. Whether we got B-roll there or, you know, main footage there or stories there, but I would say about 12 different places.
And my second question, which may be a little controversial, did you deal with some of the foods that people eat in traditionally in Korea, which most Western people wouldn't think as appropriate to eat?
You mean in the cookbook? Or on the show?
In the show or in your cookbook or in...
I think one particular food that kind of stands out that isn't really that common in Korea even is ojingo sundae, right? Which I replicated in the book. But it's delicious. It's amazing, but it's kind of famous. It's a North Korean...
It's stuffed calamari, which... You cut it up and then you fry it.
But it's stuffed with rice.
It's stuffed with rice and vegetables, and it's really good. I can tell you, I mean, one of the stories that didn't make the cut was eating live octopus. I mean, I went to Busan, and the first time I was sitting at this restaurant, and they brought out this moving food, and I just said, I don't know if Marge is really going to eat this. And so
you were actually going to try and make me eat that.
So we cut out live octopus out of the show because...
I wouldn't eat it.
Marja wouldn't eat it.
And other domestic animals, I presume, too, right?
No, nothing like that.
Oh, there's no dog or anything in there. Yeah.
Thanks. I don't think it'll fly here.
Hi, this question is for Marja. I was just wondering, actually, my sister-in-law is adopted as well. And so before she was adopted, her mother went to a Korean market and bought kimchi. And she opened it, and she thought it was rotten, so she just threw it away.
Really?
So, I mean, when you first came to the United States, and when you were growing up, was Korean food introduced to you, like, after college, or when you were in college, or even when you were with your family here in the U.S.?
I did not grow up eating it, although my father, I didn't know this at the time, but my father would always go to this Chinese restaurant, which I didn't know was Korean Chinese, and he would always order noodles with black bean sauce, which I later found out was jjajangmyeon, which is one of my favorite things to eat when I was little. Mm-hmm. So I would always, whenever he went, I would always ask him to get me some noodles with black bean sauce. Mm-hmm. But I would see kimchi every now and then in the supermarket, and I would buy it, but I kind of felt guilty in a way, wanting to know this part of my life that was now so foreign. I don't know. I guess you kind of have to be an adoptee to understand that. You have your own guilt, even with your own, you know, family that's raised you. Mm-hmm. But my main exposure came was when I found my birth mother. And she started introducing me to lots of different Korean foods, and I remembered the taste. So now there's a name for the taste.
Oh, okay, great. Yeah. Thank you. Thanks.
안녕하세요. 감사합니다. For me, I started cooking Korean food in 1973.
Wow.
And I think you're at the perfect storm. By the way, I whenever I see Neil Shapiro, I beg him to show Korean dramas. I will even do the subtitles for you.
Me too. I love it.
For me, it's an inroad, but so I appreciate what you're doing. I think it's the perfect storm because you talked about hamburgers and hot dogs. That is not traditional American fare. That came after World War II, the fast food. So we are moving back. So you have that to guide Americans in. Mm-hmm. But also, it's not a commercial. I don't know Mr. H. Mart very, very well. But when I first started cooking Korean food, I didn't know where to buy sesame oil, so I did it with corn oil. And I didn't know where to get pineal leaves, so I used lettuce leaves. And I didn't have any kimchi, so I used sauerkraut because I'm half German. Right. But and what I produced was good food, but not Korean food by any means. And I think now that changes it because I can buy gochujang anytime I want.
Right.
You know, and I think, and also with H Mart, they are unlike American supermarkets because American supermarkets are regional.
Right.
You can't find Pathmark where you find Piggly Wiggly,
right.
But H Mart is across the country. So did you find that Americans are now very interested in Korean food because it is more accessible? And also that they are no longer eating fast food but healthier food. They are thinking before.
Mm. Yeah, I think the tide's definitely changing. I just feel like, go ahead.
There's, I mean, not that just H Mart is a sponsor of the series, but I have to say that H Mart's one of the first, even supermarkets out there that offers a lot of their ingredients online. And so our website's actually going to work with their website to make sure that any of the recipes that Marja invented can be ordered online, really, with one click. Now, aside from that, I think, you know, you see going to Dean and DeLuca nowadays, you go into any Whole Foods, you see kimchi being sold, you see sesame oil in the way that Koreans eat it, not sesame oil in the non-toasted version, but you see the toasted sesame oil. And so those little subtleties, I think people are recognizing, and I still think we're not there yet, but I think through people like you who request it, we'll get there. And I think if everybody can go to their local store and request those types of things, it might, you know, make a difference.
Marja, my kimchi story is I make my own kimchi, and I had it a little too long in the refrigerator, and I asked my Irish husband, do you think this is bad? And he said, how would you know?
That's funny.
Well, thank you. And Eric, can you tell us how we can see the series beginning, this Sunday, right?
Yeah, so starting this Sunday, this episode that you already just saw will be airing 4 p.m. on Channel 13. I think I only have Time Warner. On Time Warner Channel 713, it's shown in high definition. And every Sunday at 4 o'clock, we'll show it. And then nationally, we're going to release the series in July. And that'll be kind of nationwide. You can tell your friends about it. And then we'll offer it online, iTunes, and eventually a DVD, cookbook. That comes out in August, and then we'll kind of broadcast it internationally starting the end of this year into markets that want the show. But Sundays for now, WNET, and then WLIW is another PBS station in this market. But you know, if you're not from New York, there's other PBS stations you can tell your parents and friends about. But that's July. For now, we're doing an early release on Sunday, and I mean, hopefully you'll like it to watch it again, but this Sunday, and then the second episode the Sunday after, so every week everyone can catch it.
Wonderful. And Marja will be back with us for a preview of the cookbook in July. And then we'd like to invite you all back on Thursday, May 12th, when we'll be doing an evening with My Korean Deli, which is a wonderful new book out. So thank you, and please, a round of applause for Marja and for Eric and for David. Thank you.
The opinions expressed in the preceding program are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Korea Society, its staff, management, or sponsors. Thank you for listening to this Korea Society podcast. If you enjoyed it, please consider becoming a member. Visit www.koreasociety.org for information about memberships and to learn more about all the programs available at the Korea Society.